It's been a long while since I last published an episode, due to health and other reasons, but I'm finally back and happy to be. I'll be releasing two special episodes from people I contacted through the Society of Neuroscience Conference back in 2022. First, there's an episode with Dr. Regis Grahlhi from the Institute Pasteur in Korea. It's about his research developing a new technique which is similar to multiphoton microscopy and so can do live imaging but is much cheaper and less invasive, which is good for researchers in general. I think this is incredibly interesting as it's useful for everyone because it can move interesting research forward. However, do be warned, for some reason some of the recording is missing, and after much searching and even contacting the Zoom team, I could not find it. So the episode will end partway through, but it's still a good episode to listen to.
My name is Regis Grahlhi. Mm-hmm. I'm currently French and I'm doing research in Seoul in South Korea. And I'm working at the Institute Pasteur Korea. The Institute Pasteur Korea is one of the 33 institutes all over the world. And this one was created in 2004. And I joined in 2004, right at the creation moment. I was keen building this institute and currently running my own research. And my current focus is very much into technology that can help to quantify biology and it's spread into multi-scale quantification. And currently what I will talk today is mostly a method to track in living animal neuroinflammation. Currently the way we did it, and it allows a very quick snapshot anytime you want to determine what is the inflammation level in the brain at any time. This method had required engineering of mice as well as engineering of equipment, but I will focus mostly on the mouse engineering and the application that we have performed to currently take benefit of this technology.
What animal models are you using to test your
technology? Okay. Then currently we are using a white mouse called FVB. It's a background. I mean, you have to know that every mouse that are used in research are inbred mouse. They are all twins among them. And currently we work on a specific strain. And this strain has an interesting particularity to be white. It's not just the only strain which is white, but this one is white. And also it's an excellent strain for inserting genes in the ovocytes. And if you do an insertion ovocyte, there's a high probability for this gene to be inserted in the genome and to be perpetuated along generations. Then upon this DNA injection in ovocytes, we were able to stabilize a given piece of DNA in a transgenic strain. Then what we've done is we have injected currently chimeric reporter, which is composed of promoter of human promoter that drive particular gene, which is currently activated upon inflammation and which is specifically expressed in astrocytes. Then what you have to know is that half of the brain is constituted of glial cells. Mm-hmm. Half of the brain is constituted of neuronal cells. And among glial cells, one of the main populations are astrocytes. And those astrocytes are really key for protecting the brain against injury. That's why once you have an injury or stress, those cells will react. Very often they react upon inflammation. And then this particular piece of DNA is currently turning on when you have inflammation and off when currently there's nothing, no stress. In fact, there's a basal level, there's a very minimal level of expression when everything goes well. And then what we did it, we behind this promoter, which is kind of reactive unit, attached a protein, which is currently not from human, not from mouse, but from current sea life form, which is in the sea. And it's currently a fluorescent protein that has the particularity to be fluorescent upon excitation with infrared light.
Then, why did you choose infrared light and not normal?
Then this really key in our search. The main idea was to try to demonstrate if it was possible to use infrared protein. Why infrared protein is then to use infrared protein to be detectable deep into tissues. Now, the reason why we use infrared is because infrared light has a physical property to cross larger layer of tissue as compared to a light would be more in the blue zone. Then if you want high energy light would be more blue, low energy light would be more red. The particularity of high energy light, the blue one, UV, is that they will not penetrate. Then, for example, UV will barely not cross your skin. But since it's very high energy, what it does, it's all this energy will be stopped by the skin. And unfortunately, that will create some damage to the cell skins. Very often, what you would have is you would undergo some mutation. And this mutation can lead to cancer. Then the UV light has high energy, stopped by the skin. Unfortunately, it will break the nuclei and lead to some cancer and usually skin cancer. And that's why you should not expose yourself to too much light, UV light, because you will just increase the speed of your skin to age. But if you are using infrared light, all this disappear in a certain way because now the light can cross. And all this energy will be distributed across many, many layers. On top of that, the photons has much lower energy. And this lower energy, better penetration. Now, if it penetrates better, you will be able to reach probes that are deeper embedded in the tissues. Those probes will re-emit to even a longer wavelength, further in the red, further in the infrared, and therefore crossing back, bouncing back to, for example, a detector, where you would be able to visualize whether or not those proteins are and the quantity of protein that are present in a given part of the tissue. Then those particular mice, when we generate them, we were expecting that because of the small DNA that we injected, because of this human DNA that is targeting at astrocytes that are localized in the brain, that we'll be able to see this fluorescence only in the brain and not in the animal. And that was the case. Mm-hmm. But then during the study where we challenged the mice to determine if any challenge will lead to an increase of this signal and whether this increase will be proportional to inflammation. And we try different models. We try to use pharmacological models that lead to seizures that are very well known to generate some neuroinflammation. Yeah. And we were able to see a very strong rise of expression of this fluorescent protein in the brain of mice, able therefore to track inflammation in living mice across a month period of time by just acquiring every day. And then we pushed further the envelope by breeding these mice with Alzheimer mice that are non-property to generate amyloid peptide to a very high level, create some amyloid deposit in the brain, and those amyloid deposits are known to induce neuroinflammation. Now, when we breed these mice with our reporter mice, we see that roughly after 6 months of age, there's a significant increase of our reporter, which is associated with inflammation mm-hmm. in males, and even stronger in female. And this correlates currently to report that show that female in mice with the same reporter have increased inflammation. It's also interesting to know that females are more likely to have Alzheimer than men, and there might be a correlation currently with neuroinflammation, but this is just an hypothesis. Okay. Then why do we do that? Currently, our approach was really to look for, I would say, to develop a method where we are able to track something which is very difficult to currently quantify. And nowadays, if you want to look at neuroinflammation, what you have to do is you have to sacrifice the mice, and then yeah. you have to look in the brain and determine whether or not you have neuroinflammation. And unfortunately, this is very sad. It's very inefficient because you currently have to have a large number of mice to currently perform a study, which is very important.
Yeah, because you can't look whatever marker you're looking at various different time points, because if you want to look at various different time points, you need, for example, you need another rat to look at the brain to see, okay, at 3 months, it's like this, at 6 months. How long can you use this technique for? Can you
forever, as long as the mice is alive? Yeah, there's no, you can start from birth. This is also a part of the study that we perform. Those astrocytes I mean, when you are born, a baby which is born has plenty of neurons. Okay. I mean, the brain is full of neurons, and these neurons will currently mature, and astrocytes are very required for maturation of neurons. Mm-hmm. They currently here also to remove too many synapses. But when you are born, you don't have astrocytes, or very, very few. And from the first day, the astrocyte population will grow and spread in the brain, and then they will start to really connect with the brain tissues and then really create this complex harmony between glia cells and neurons. Okay, mm-hmm. And when we look at the PEPs after birth, we see that the signal is very weak, and we see the signal increasing up to day 9, mm-hmm. then dropping back. And currently, this is what we call it astrogenesis. It's yeah. The burst of astrocyte after birth. We can visualize it in PEPs. Then we can visualize from birth, day one to the last day before you die. I mean, and this is also very interesting to be able then to track any time over time at any time something which is, as you mentioned, that will require a sacrifice. Then this opens a lot of perspectives. And for example, I will give you an example. We can see that animals after birth, yeah. although they have exactly the same genetic background, as I mentioned, they are all twins because they are inbred. They have exactly the same genetic background, but they don't have the same level of inflammation. Yeah. And we don't know why. And they are from the same group of their brother and sisters, yeah. and then there could be some epigenetic reasons that are linked to ranking among mice, positioning within the belly. One will receive more food than another one. There can be multiple reasons, but this is really interesting to see that although they have the same genetic background, they don't have the same neuroinflammation level. And if we track this neuroinflammation level, it's really, really, really flat and doesn't change over day to day. And if we track over a month, the one that starts with a lower neuroinflammation will end up 1 month later with lowest neuroinflammation, and the highest will be remain the highest. And it's really, really stable in the currently laboratory environment, yeah. But the question would be, oh, why why this is such a difference? Then I think this type of tools that we develop would be maybe already able to raise the question, to see the difference, and eventually to track. The second reason why you want to use such animals is that for studying disease, long-term disease, like a chronic disease, like Alzheimer's, this is fantastic because you will need only a few mice, let's say 10 mice per group will be plenty, and you will be able to collect a data point every week for the entire life of the animal. And this really, really, it's extremely rich in data. This is called longitudinal approach, where you are capable of carrying a quantification. And the third point we see is currently to test drugs. For example, if you have an Alzheimer's mice model that has a huge inflammation that we know is linked to the amyloid currently molecules that are overexpressed in the brain, we could eventually test drugs that would reduce this neuroinflammation. Mm-hmm. And eventually, if those that have a reduction of inflammation sacrifice, look in the brain, and determine if this reduction was beneficial or non-beneficial. Or you can eventually perform behavioral studies on those mice that have a reduction of neuroinflammation to determine if there's some benefit on learning process, for example. Then that will help you to select and to track the entire drug effect. And for example, eventually the drug would not act after 3 days, but 4 or 5 days. And by carrying over a repeated measurement, you'll be able to see that.
Okay.
Then this will save a lot of animals and at the same time open new capacity to really reach out some very, very difficult information to reach out due to the massive amount of number of mice that you need, or the very, very small increase or decrease level. Because currently the signature, the signal is really, really robust in our method, because there's not much interference with usually, I mean, there's an alternative technique currently which is used and that people are using, is to use a bioluminescence protein, which is very, very sensitive. But the disadvantage is that you have to use substrate. Now, if you use substrate, the substrate will reach the brain at a variable level across time. And if I inject it now, in maybe in 15 minutes, I would have a maximum of substrate in the brain. Then I would have a maximum signal in the brain at 15 minutes, and that will reduce. Then it's very, very complicated to determine where is my point. Is it at 15 minutes? Did I inject exactly the same volume? There's so much variability that it's very, very difficult to look at fine variation. In our case, the protein is there, and we just look at it. Then this is absolutely, it's extremely simple.
And the technology, like the microscope you use in the techniques, are they quite complicated? Like, how long does it take to learn this technique and do it? Like, is it, would it be hard for the labs to learn it? And is the microscope used quite common, or would it have to be adapted?
Okay. Then research is not about, it's not always about having complicated idea or complicated technique. It can be the opposite.
Yeah.
In my case, it's exactly the opposite. It's a very, very, very simple idea.
I was thinking, like, how easy is it for other labs to be able to use this? Because sometimes
to generate
techniques that are really hard to use.
Okay. Then I'm answering two questions. The first one could be that, is it difficult to make? And then the answer is no. It's extremely simple. It's a classical transgenic. I mean, simple. It's a classical thing. There's nothing fancy. The only thing is that I took two ideas and I put together.
Yeah.
Making a transgenic, and why not using an infrared protein? Nobody did it before, and I try. I think it's there was maybe a consensus that it will not work, but somehow I had some form of courage, educated courage to try, and it worked. Now, how is it easy to use? Super simple to use.
Okay.
It's extremely... you could use a practically a regular camera that you use to take photos with your family. Oh. You modify slightly the camera, and you'll be able to see currently. We use a GoPro, for example.
Okay.
By modifying GoPro, it's possible to see. I think with a cell phone, it will be possible to see. With a Sony camera that you use for taking photo, then this is currently... it's something that we haven't published, but currently we are developing the instrumentation.
Yes.
To currently track those mice. There's already instrumentation available, but we think that the method is so simple that it doesn't justify the cost of the current instrumentation.
Yeah.
And we believe that the cost is 100 times too expensive as it should be. I'm saying 100 times, 100.
Okay.
And then currently we will in 2023 we will currently release the method to make this instrumentation for 100 times less money. That is not only simple to use, but it's also simple to make.
That's quite... I'll keep this technique in mind, because I'm doing a PhD and eventually I'll be doing rat work, and one of the things I've been thinking about is, like, do I want to view it? Because the only other technique I know to view it, the rats live, is using a multiphoton microscope, but that's quite complicated. Okay. And
but multiphoton is currently it's very complicated. You have to anesthetize the mice.
Yeah.
You have to open the skull. You need to put your microscope, your lens on the skull opening. But you have a high resolution with two-photon microscope. But the problem is, you're gonna have a machine that costs $500,000, which is the two-photon, and this machine will be dedicated for one poor mice that has a massive, operation on the brain. It's an open skull currently surgery.
Oh, man, so and, does the technique not need to open the?
No. You just we do a quick anesthesia, which is currently you leave the mice into a box that contain some anesthetic vapors, mm-hmm. and this is currently a classical anesthetic. And the mice will stay 30 seconds and start to just sleep. As soon as it sleep, we put it in the machine, and it takes 1/30 of a second to acquire the image.
Oh.
Then after you just drop the mouse on the machine, close the door, take the picture, open the door, put back the mice in the cage. Then the anesthetic currently, which is required because you don't want a mouse, you want the mouse to be exactly in the same position. That's why we need to do some form of anesthetic. It's a flash anesthetic. And currently, while we are doing the imaging, we don't need anything to maintain this anesthesia. Just by taking the mice, putting it in the machine, the mouse will be 10 to 15 seconds really in deep sleep, and we drop it back to her cage, and she will wake up a few seconds later, and it will be good. Then by receiving a minimum of anesthetic, also the mouse, because anything you do to a mouse will be a bias, then you want to minimize discomfort, stress, and of course, a drug, then anesthetic, unfortunately, it's a drug. Then you want to minimize the interference with your experiment. And therefore, the fact that we are able to minimize the inhalation of the mice with this anesthetic contribute to reduce currently artifacts.
Okay.
For example, for the two photon, you would have to have permanent flow of this anesthetic, where the mouse will keep in breathing this gas and to maintain the mice in deep sleep.
And how long did it take you to develop this technique?
Well, to generate a transgenic, it's just a matter of month.
I mean, the technique to view like.
It's already available. Then currently, there's already machine that are doing fluorescence imaging, but currently, mostly they are used to track fluorescence molecules that you inject in the mice. What we did was to currently generate a stable fluorescent mouse, a mouse that has a gene which is. Constantly expressed in the mouse and can be regulated upon a given stress. And as this, the gene, as I mentioned, is currently an infrared fluorescent protein. Then this is a transgenic mice. Generating a transgenic mice takes a few months. First, you have to currently collect eggs from a female mm-hmm. that are super ovulated. And then you have to inject in those eggs at a certain stage some DNA, and those cells will be re-injected in a female that, and those eggs will attach to the uterus and generate pups. And among the pups that will be generated, if you are lucky, one may have your foreign DNA sequence inside the genome, and that is one step, but this is not enough. But you also want that this sequence is in a particular region of the genome that does not prevent the expression of the gene of interest, in our case the RFRS protein, because you could be in a zone which is very a silent zone which is very much repressed. And then you have nothing. But if it's in a proper zone, you might have currently some expression. And among the few that were generated, we were lucky to have one that leads to sufficient expression or reporter in the brain.
And what gave you this idea to like develop your technique? Like, how did you come to it?
Well, I think it was more motivation. I mean, I'm always looking for I see that researchers are very dragged by technology, and they always looking to how can I say? It's a little bit like fashion. I mean, if you love fashion, you will go for the expensive clothes.
Yeah.
But if you are good at fashion, you can go to a very, very cheap place, buy cheap clothes, and create your own fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can go for both. You can decide, okay, I'm gonna follow the trend, I buy the best, and I will play the game, and I will be recognized as a very fashionable person. But you can also say, no, I'm not going to do that. I at the technological level, I'm going to create my own way. And I'm more the type of person that doesn't like to follow too much the trend that is where I feel it's wrong. And I personally, I don't really like hurting animals. Then you mentioned, for example, two-photon microscopy. It's something that I really hate.
Oh, okay.
The thought of opening the skull of an animal
mm-hmm.
and watching over hours this animal brain activity, it's something that I feel it stressed me a lot. And one main reason why I developed this technology was really to find a way to avoid that and also to increase the throughput of information. And for example, when you're doing this type of invasive approach, you would do one experiment a day. In my case, I can raise a colony of 100 mice in a day. I can currently measure 100 mice. It will take me, 10 seconds per mouse, then it's completely possible.
Yeah.
Then I can ask more questions, and in the same time, I'm not putting the mice into a very, very stressful situation that can sometimes lead to death, and because the surgery it's not I would say a light surgery when you're putting the skull.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Then I think I'm a little bit dragged by the humane aspect, avoiding as I can. And I'm also dragged by the content and exploring the content in a different way. Instead of, for example, focusing on, okay, I want to see the cell very well, why not to currently increase the content, but over time?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not looking at this mice only for a few hours, but I will look at it for an entire life.
Okay.
Then I will maintain, in a certain way, an equivalent level of content, but in more human way.
Mm.
And the third one, it's important, is to have fun, to find ways that nobody has found before.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I would say there's a fourth one, is to increase the spread of technology. Then currently, if the technology is very expensive, as I mentioned before, to photon technology, for example, would be $500,000. Then therefore, only few institutes will be able to carry over this research.
Yeah.
I'm more in favor of technology that are easily spread and across various institutes, regardless of their budget. Yeah. And across various institutes, regardless of their budget. Yeah.